Hello, everybody. We are continuing now with Techniques of Fusion and Duality, webinar commentaries number 4. We're in Esoteric Psychology 2, page 393, and we're about to take on the second ray technique. It is called Inclusive Reason, and I think very closely related to pure reason, the kind of consciousness which can be found focused on the Buddhic plane. Inclusive reason, which is the theme for initiatory meditation. That's how these techniques work, really, isn't it? So a technique, as listed, a technique, as here listed, is a theme for, and it says, initiatory meditation. So leading us to the true first initiation, which is the third initiation. So which is the theme. So we might as well have said, let's see here, isolated unity as the theme for the initiatory meditation of the first ray disciple. The keynotes of the three techniques are as follows. Okay, well, maybe these are keynotes and cannot really be considered techniques per se. Perhaps the technique is hidden within the keynote, or perhaps the technique is revealed through initiatory meditation upon the keynote. He has not yet really said what the technique is per se. When it comes to the seven methods of ray integration, of soul-personality integration, he has given us seven stanzas, and here we do not have stanzas. We simply have themes upon which initiatory meditation is to take place. But anyway, although he has not said this is the technique, you can pretty well gather that through the proper kind of meditation, the proper kind of meditation upon these keynotes or themes produces the technique. So the proper kind of meditation upon these themes or keynotes produces the technique. So this is the theme for initiatory meditation of the second ray disciple, and produces, and this is a sentence that I've long carefully considered, produces that inherent divine capacity which enables the detail of the sensed whole to be grasped with meticulous entirety. Meticulous entirety. That is especially the keynote, I think, of the third type of second ray soul, as Master D.K. discusses these types in Discipleship in the New Age, page 518. Okay, let's see. Inclusive reason, the theme for the initiatory meditation, produces that inherent, yes. It's the sensing of the whole. I want to discuss the sensing of the whole, because that is exactly what we find in the Angel of the Presence stanzas. The whole is with us now. The whole is sensed. The whole is known. All kinds of references to the ability to perceive the wholeness. And so we have a link between these three techniques of fusion and the Angel of the Presence stanzas. And these stanzas are also linked with the technique of duality, which brings the two together in a field of unbroken unity. So the technique of duality never sees the separation of the poles. It always considers the poles within the context of a perceived wholeness, a perceived whole. So this is an important idea here. The detail of the sensed whole is grasped with meticulous entirety. Now, if we read Master D.K.'s work, think of its voluminous, extensive, and to us at least, detailed nature, its meticulousness, at least from our point of view, even though he thinks he is writing only in outline form, we will understand something of meticulous entirety. Grasping the nature of Master D.K.'s work, we will understand something of meticulous entirety. The detail of the sensed whole. Now, the first ray disciple is more interested in isolating the whole and is likely to consider the detail of far less importance. This is the way the first ray types are in general in their life. Give me the principles and do not clutter the expeditiousness of my path forward with too much detail, unless it is really relevant. But the second ray type wants to know all of the detail, all of the interaction. There are three signs of the zodiac we know which bring in the second ray. And we say, of these three signs of the zodiac which bring in, in the second ray, and these are Gemini, Virgo, and Pisces, I think we can see that the Mercury, Mercurian signs are the ones to which the quality or the tendency towards meticulous entirety are to be found. This tendency is to be found in the Mercurian signs, to which the tendency to consider subjects with meticulous entirety. I think I'm going to make one of those little abbreviations. Meticulous entirety. Okay. I think we can see that the Mercurian signs are the ones to which the tendency to consider subjects with meticulous entirety refer. Well, it's a little twisted sentence, sorry for that. But anyway, and especially Virgo. But of course, Gemini is, if I can put it like this, meticulously entiretous, meticulously entiretous in considering the relations between the many contents of consciousness or things. When I use the word thing, to me it is equivalent to a content of consciousness. Okay, the word thing is to me equivalent to a content of consciousness. This wide yet detailed scope of universal recognition, because we're dealing with wholeness, is extremely difficult for me to explain or for you to understand. I suppose if we are engaged in this type of pursuit, it's easier to understand. If we are avid, faithful, consistent readers of the Tibetan's books, and if we are determined to understand and to correlate the many facts and factors presented with each other, we will begin to understand something about the breadth, the detail, the scope, the universality of this type of recognition. And of course, the law of analogy will help us here. This wide yet detailed, that's the point. It's not wide in general, it's wide and detailed. Scope or universal recognition, this is what we have, is extremely difficult for me to explain or for you to understand. It's as if we can think through the power of analogy of any content of cosmos and come up with relations to that content. It is as if it is. How does that go? It is as if we can think of any content of the universal, of the cosmos, and find analogous relations to it, a place for it, a place where it might fit, and connections to it, links. It's very, this inclusive reason is really very Mercurian. But at the same time, it is Jupiterian in its breadth. And of course, when you think about it, Mercury and Jupiter are the two planets which rule the signs through which the second ray is at this time particularly transmitted. The second ray has been called the ray of detailed knowledge. There are so many names for these rays. And if we read through the books, we begin to grasp a few of them. He doesn't give them all in the same place. He does tell us something about the ray in Esoteric Psychology 1, where certain names of the ray lords are given, but particularly indicative titles are also found elsewhere. So the second ray has been called the ray of detailed knowledge, and where this term has been employed, the beginner, in other words, one who does not understand fully, has necessarily laid the emphasis upon the word detail. It might rather be called the ray of detailed unity, because the unity in which the detail exists must be grasped, not just a lot of uncorrelated details. The correlation of detail within a sensed wholeness is necessary. Or it might also be called here the ray of the divine pattern, and hence is related to archetypes. Or the ray of beauty in relationship, we'll put it this way, ray of beauty in relationship. The middle rays, such as the second and fourth, are rays where the factor of beauty, which is right balance and proportion, are expressed. The factor of beauty considered as right balance and right proportion relate to both the fourth ray, which is directly known as the ray of beauty, and also to the second ray. So beauty in relationship, in other words, there is a purpose, a design, a plan conceived in beauty. Let's just say the purpose or the divine purpose is conceived in beauty, and it is the second ray type of consciousness which easily understands this type of archetypal conception. When God, the planetary logos, whatever creator, meditates, the relations upon which he meditates are related beautifully. All the archetypes are integral to each other, reinforcing each other, maximizing of each other. So in a beautiful composition, every aspect of it enhances the other aspects. We do not have a disjointed or unrelated aggregation. The items are related to each other in a way that support the value, the meaning, the significance, the nature of each other. This is true in music. I suppose it's true in dance. It's true in drama. We all know what it's like to see some factor in an artistic composition which stands out all by itself and seems disjointed or inappropriately placed, like it came out of nowhere, has no relations. Why is it there? And if that is the case, we will not have beauty. But with the second ray, we have the kind of sensing of the detail, sensing of the unity of the detail, which reveals the beauty of that detail and why the detail is placed as it is. So there's the sense of wholeness and the sense of detail simultaneously, and you must have both in order to have inclusive reason or pure reason. When the intuition reveals the structure of things, we find that that structure is beautifully conceived. I'm going to write that as much for my sake as for yours. When the intuition reveals the detail of the whole, we find that that detail is beautifully conceived by the mastermind which conceived it, whether the planetary logos or solar logos, etc. So when we use the formula or the keynote, when using the keynote inclusive reason, we sense detail, wholeness, beauty, appropriateness. We grasp all parts and the relationship of each and every part to each and every other part and to the whole which contains them. All right, I think, you know, for the moment, that's the best I can do. I could meditate on that more, and, you know, but you can as well, and try to see, you know, if you are on the second ray, is it this aspect of the second ray, which is rather, I think, connected with the third ray part of it, if we're looking only at the first three sub-aspects, see if that part of the second ray on which you find yourself is this part, or whether it's the part which is pure love, or whether it is the part which is wisdom, often austere wisdom. Try to, and the three exemplars of these types, at least in my mind, you know, are the Buddha for the first sub-aspect, the Christ for the second sub-aspect, and Master DK for the third sub-aspect, and maybe when I think of Master KH, I think of the fusion of the second and third sub-aspects of the second ray. So this approach and this way of apprehension, this way of perceiving parts and wholes, let's say, this way parts and wholes involves, on the part of the disciple, a very high point of synthetic comprehension. So you see, we can understand this is much more than the techniques of integration can reveal. This is the liberation of the consciousness into that which the soul, or later the true ego, perceives. A very high point of synthetic comprehension. The wholeness is indeed grasped, but more attention is given to relationship within the whole. So, while the wholeness is grasped, more attention is given to the manner, I'll simply say, to relationship within the whole. And when we ask ourselves, what mean you by that word, you know, or when we ask ourselves, what does that mean, we are actually looking for all the connections that our particular focus has within the context we are considering. What does this mean within the context in which it is placed? So one technique to pursue this kind of understanding is to ask, what is the meaning of this content of consciousness within the whole, within the context? In which it is placed. We can look at a thing, and it just looks like a thing, unrelated. We can look at a person, a city, an automobile, a planet, whatever, any content of consciousness. What is it? Well, we just look at it. But until we know its relations, where it came from, where it's going, what it's affected by, what it affects, we do not know what it is. And until we begin to study all of its relations, or as many as we possibly can, we do not know what it is within the context, what it means within its present context. XT. Okay, so I think we begin to understand something here of this synthetic point of view, which does not ignore the articulation grasped or included within the synthesis. It is a synthetic point of view which attends to the meaning of all aspects which are included within the synthesis. Well, you know, we have to practice this. We have to look at things and meditate upon them and try to see them within the context of the whole in which they are being considered. I'm just looking at things. Here's the mouse of the computer. Here's a little plastic container of green tea. Here's a hearing aid. There's a tree, there's a leaf. What is the true meaning which can only emerge when that item in consciousness, that content of consciousness, is related to every other thing within the entirety of my consciousness? As I can perceive, to the extent that I can perceive, some relative degree of wholeness. Meaning. Meaning is extremely important in this second-ray method of perception. Important in this second-ray method of, I want to call it understanding. Okay. You will note how in all these three keynotes, keynotes for advanced meditation, and we might almost say that the techniques involved are meditative techniques. That it is through meditation that we are able to achieve the fusion. At least meditation plays a great part in the achieving of this fusion. So he hasn't really named the technique per se. And with the techniques of integration, he has at least given us a sequence, a point at which the individual begins. He's not integrated. A perception that comes from the soul. A word is spoken or some statement is made that obviously contains soul perception. A period of destruction ensues in which one must stop doing what he has been doing before, and a period of construction when he must begin doing something he hasn't done before. And then some realizations come. And in all of this, there is the technique of what I would call the integrative word. We remember, you know, inclusion, ray one, centralization, ray two, stillness, ray three, steadfastness, ray four, detachment, ray five, maybe dissociation or restraint, ray six. I've used the word orientation, ray seven. If the implications of those words are followed, they kind of summarize what it is the disciple must do to achieve a greater integration. We've had the rapidly integrating personality, during which time the soul has applied the technique of integration, but a fifth factor is brought in when the technique of integration is applied. It's the voice of the soul, the energy of the soul, which is added to the previous fourfold integration. Now we have a fivefold integration. So we understand something about how we are to proceed from being a normal individual who's not especially integrated with the soul energy, although perhaps fairly rapidly integrating within the personality itself, all the way to one who really has brought these five fields together and in whom the energy system of the soul and that of the personality and its vehicles is interacting increasingly and more efficiently and with less disintegrative happenings. We all know what it's like for one of our vehicles to be out of alignment or not functioning with the others. You know, we have very good ideas, we have a keen desire, maybe we have a lazy, inactive body. Well, right away, that body is out of alignment with the other integration already perceived. Or, you know, we might have great vitality and a keen desire to do something, and we might lack the knowledge and mental perception telling us how to do something. So there, the mental vehicle is not part of the vibrant integration of the lower vehicles. Or, you know, one of the usual things that can happen is that the personality is ready and capable, but it doesn't know about the soul. And it wants to follow its own ends, and therefore the soul energy system and the personality energy system are not integrated with each other. And so you could go along showing how any one vehicle could stand in the way of a more complete integration. The astral body, well, you know, what if the physical body is perfectly capable and the mind is really sharp and one is highly motivated to do something in the deeper inner sense, but there's something in you that just doesn't want to do it and has other desires instead of this particular type of desire. You can't get yourself really motivated in the three worlds to do the thing that inwardly you know really should be done, and you know why it should be done, and you have a physical mechanism that's capable of doing it, but you have certain repetitive desires which are leading in an entirely different direction, and they have not been sorted out, purified, reoriented towards those factors which are already integrated. I think you get the idea of what integration can mean. But here we have keynotes for advanced meditation, and it is the advanced disciple, maybe especially following the second degree, who can do this kind of meditative work, and for whom doing this kind of meditative work is pertinent, because this type of disciple is aiming eventually for the third degree, and it's at the third degree that the fusion really takes place, and the angel and the dweller, or the angel and the individual, or we can call the one that comes together with the angel by any number phrases, the monad in extension, the monad in immersion, the monad in the three worlds, the jiva, etc. This is the prodigal son who is aiming to fuse in a sort of first step in his return path to his monadic home with the angel, or with his egoic nature. So that kind of fusion is an advanced process, and it requires some advanced meditation to see it occur. So you will note how these three keynotes for advanced meditation, it's not just a question of practicing them, it's a question of really doing some inner work concerning them, and then I think their expression will come easier. In two senses, it's all about realization, the realization of isolated unity, or the realization of what happens when you isolate the wholeness, the realization of what happens when you, in fact, see the detail of the sensed whole with meticulous entirety, and maybe the realization of what the attribute you must present is, and why you must present it, in what context you must present it, what good it will do if you do present it, how you must present it. All of that takes a meditative approach. So you will note how in all these three keynotes for advanced meditation, there is the calling of the disciples. There we need a apostrophe. Disciples' attention to those related arrangements which constitute the whole when brought into relation with each other. So let's just say the wholeness or the contents of the wholeness consists of related arrangements. The whole itself homogeneously, EOUS, is something distinct and is different to its contents. But still the contents have to be considered. I mean, any whole is what it is in terms of being. It is exactly what it is. And its contents from the being aspect are aspects of itself. We are within the wholeness of the planetary logos, and we monadically, essentially, are aspects of the planetary logos. To perceive the wholeness and to perceive the contents can at first be two different perceptions, and then later the two can be perceived together without compromising either of the perceptions. The word isolated, the words detailed and presented for presented attributes would seem to indicate separative recognition. But This is emphatically not so. Since we're dealing with meditations leading to the third degree, we are dealing with meditations leading to the third degree. The whole is always that which must be in mind, as I have pointed out in the Angel of the Presence stanzas. That word whole is repetitively present and indicates the type of perception which occurs when this merging with the angel is underway. So the word isolated, the words detail and presented would, or detailed, would seem to indicate separative recognition, but this is emphatically not so. Wholeness is always present. They simply indicate and refer to the intricate internal life of the organized creation of God. What marvelous phrases we have here from D.K.'s thought, giving us with unusual precision his perceptions on these matters, at least as much as they can be put in words. So these apparently isolated words, emphasizing recognition of separate items and things, in fact refer to the intricate internal life of the organized creation of God, and are never to be divorced from the ongoing perception of wholeness in which these processes take place. And by that I mean the noting of isolation, of detail, and of attributes to present. Okay, so they simply indicate and refer to the intricate, and there's so much, so often, that Master D.K. refers to the intricacy as being too great at a particular time to present to the student in any kind of completeness. He sees immediately into the intricacy of all things, and somehow he has to essentialize this very wide and detailed perception into something that we can grasp. He couldn't present to us the entire intricacy that he perceives simultaneously. He could not do that yet. We could not grasp it. So these apparently separative words, simply indicate and refer to the intricate internal life of the organized creation of God, wherein the consciousness, released from all material pettiness and self-centeredness, so this is an advanced consciousness which is freed from material and personal preoccupation, sees not only the periphery of the whole, but the beauty and purpose of every aspect of the inner structure. I guess he's really talking about the kind of consciousness that we can gain when we study his works and make them, as it has been said somewhere, a rule of living, a rule of life. So looking at this again, these words, apparently separative words, simply indicate and refer to the intricate internal life of the organized creation of God. We don't really know much of what's really going on. More and more, the intricacies of form are related, but the intricate ways in which the life of the astral plane or mental plane is related to that of the physical plane, and the intricate connections of still higher planes to all the mechanisms of the three lower worlds, well, for us, really unknown. We may think that we have many details that we have grasped about occultism, but if you really stop to think about it, it's very, very few compared to what's really going on. So this intricate and organized internal life here, the intricate internal life of the organized creation of God is hardly grasped by us. But when the consciousness is released from all material preoccupation, pettiness, self-centeredness, so you see, ahamkara, let's just say, the ahamkara has been dealt a fatal blow, then we can meditate in this way on these themes. And this type of meditation is not personal and is not related to the personality at all, but to the whole in which we as souls, well, as souls and spirits, soul and spirit have our place. So we see when we can do this, and this is not just in the case of inclusive reason. It looks like this type of awareness of the wholeness and of the sense detail is common to all the states, but I suppose in differing degree. The third-ray type will emphasize more the methods of manifestation, the second-ray type more the interrelationships of the vision, and the first-ray type more the synthesis of all factors in this isolated wholeness, at least isolated in our perception. So in all these cases, there is seen not only the periphery of the whole, but the beauty and purpose of every aspect of the inner structure. See, a real appreciation, we say, for function of every part, and a realization of the beauty of that function. Just as an average, the average yet unthinking human being knows that he is a person of intricate design, he's got lots of parts to him, right? Especially the physical nature, of multiple interior organisms within the physical body, which produce an aggregate of living forms, correlated and functioning as a unity. Yes, the average person will know this, but of which he, in fact, knows nothing except their general nature. It's a bit like, if you're not trained in medicine, how will you know how all the organs interact and all the substances and chemicals which are produced in the body, which have various kinds of effect upon these different organs and upon each other? So he knows nothing. He knows that he is complicated, but he knows nothing except the general fact that he is complicated. He doesn't know the intricacies. So the aspirant upon the probationary path may see the whole, of which he is similarly a part. But, you know, just say, but what really does he know of the functioning of this whole? What really? Just as the intelligent student of humanity and the highly educated thinker knows in greater detail and fuller comprehension the general equipment and more detailed purpose of the organized whole, which we call man, let's just say someone with medical or psychological training. So the disciple, in the early stages of his career upon the path of discipleship, comes to see and grasp wider aspects of the interrelationships of the organized organism through which deity is working out his plans and purposes. So he's talking about the grasp of the wholeness, or man's wholeness, let's say, in the average unthinking person, but yet who is enough educated to know that there is complexity to his nature, and the aspirant, who knows a bit more about the wholeness in which he's engaged. And then we have, let's say, the medical or psychology practitioner who knows rather more than does the average man about the functioning of that unity, that mechanism we call man. And then the analogy continues, then the disciple knows more than the aspirant about the wider aspects and the interrelationships of the organism. Well, now actually he'll come to the trained physician. So I jumped the gun there a little bit. We have the average man, the intelligent man, and now the trained man, the physician or the psychologist. Right. I spoke a little too soon. But the analogy continues, and I think you can see it. Just as the trained physician, who is also a trained psychologist, a rare thing to find, but in FCD, we did find it. That was Roberto Saggioli, who was involved with the Tibetans group, as we know, and it was a high disciple of Master K.H. Just as the trained physician, who is also a trained psychologist, views the human body and its energies, well, in a, you know, with a real appreciation for its intricacy and interactions, so the disciple upon the latter stages of the path also grasps the plans, purposes, and materialized ideas of God. The analogy goes on with the knower of the human body on one side and the aspirant disciple and advanced disciple trying to know the whole on the other side. So knowing the human body is a progressive thing, and knowing the intricate nature of the wholeness is a progressive type of understanding. Where do we stand in this? Well, if we are avid readers of a treatise on cosmic fire, we will drop our jaw in awe about what we do not know. Jaw, awe. Those two rhyme with each other. It's interesting that when you're in awe, you drop your jaw. It must be something about the AW. So the further you go, the less you know, up to a point, so it seems. And DK tells he's just giving us a little outline in the treatise on cosmic fire. We can only wonder what there is to know. But occasionally, as happened for Alice Bailey, glimpses would occur of that about which the Tibetan did not speak at all in his books. And she was amazed at the implications of what he did say and how they pointed to the vastness and intricacy of what could not yet be said, or perhaps what has to be realized by every awakening disciple himself and cannot be put in exoteric form. This is but a feeble effort in my attempt to show the vastness of knowledge required when a man begins to use these three seed thoughts in meditation. Well, you know, and we might say, apparently, even for the first ray type, who will emphasize wholeness rather than the detail. But still, vast knowledge will be required. We can certainly understand that with someone who is attempting to present divine attributes through manifestation, how much knowledge will be required there. So we are really talking about advanced meditations which do go beyond that which is achieved using the techniques of integration, though the achievements there can be high. We're talking about the consciousness that results from fusion. So much of this discussion, really, is about the consciousness which can be achieved through the use of these fusion formulas. The living structure, as it expresses ideas, the intricate beauty of the inner relationships within the expressing whole, the circulation of the energy which is working out the divine idea, The points of force and local points of energy which act as power and light stations within that whole, all these stand revealed to the man who is permitted as a soul to meditate upon the phrase, such a phrase as inclusive reason. Well, what a marvelous summary here of what can be revealed through this type of meditation. And we will review that. I think, you know, we have to ponder on that. So if we are permitted, well, why permitted, you know? And as a soul, see, one cannot meditate, upon this theme, inclusive reason, as a personality. It will not work. One has to be freed from ahamkara. One has to be freed from material pettiness and preoccupation, and from the worst aspects, anyway, of ahamkara, because even after the third degree, some aspects of it can still remain. Otherwise, as I've often said, the rich young man would not have gone sadly away when invited on the path to take the fourth initiation by the Christ. So the living structure as it expresses ideas, the beings in the triadal world, the energy beings in the triadal worlds, the intricate beauty of the inner relationships within the expressing whole, and I suppose both within the three worlds of human evolution and also even within the five worlds, there are great relationships there to be seen. The circulation of the energy, which is working out the divine idea, and that's really what's happening through the science of cycles, both ray cycles and astrological cycles, and what these energies are, how they relate, where they go. The points of force and local points of energy. So energy applied in form and energy which is freer, which act as power and light stations within that whole. So what are the points from which the energies depart and circulate? And what are these points which receive energies departing in from other points of force and energy? What are these? We can already begin to see the intricacy of it all. All these stand revealed to the man who is permitted as a soul, liberated from the thraldom of personality, even after the fourth degree. Even after the fourth degree, to meditate upon such a phrase as inclusive reason. We can see how Buddhic this theme, inclusive reason, really is, and how it would help to be unhampered by personality at all, as is the case with the initiate following the fourth degree, to meditate upon this phrase. A master could meditate upon the phrase inclusive reason, because the master is developing ever wider Buddhic consciousness. So we do have some very high themes for meditation here. The reason here referred to, let's see. Okay, well, we have a bit more to go, don't we? The reason here referred to is that pure, intuitional, infallible comprehension. Thus it is, I see it, I know it directly. I do not have to reason about it because I have direct knowledge of it. The reason he referred to, the reason for all things, not the reasoning, and this is not the reasoning to the reason for all things, is that pure, intuitional, infallible comprehension, we would say simply knowing the truth without mediation, which grasps cause and effect simultaneously, as when the Buddha said, well, of karma, it is as inevitable as the back wheels of a cart following exactly the path that the front wheels have taken. So there is this sense of the inevitability of cause and effect, and one can see the effect simultaneously from the cause. We know what the effect must be through a deep understanding of the cause. It's as if this will happen if the cause continues as it is. Of course, if we modify the cause, then something else will happen, and that we see as well. So this infallible comprehension, which grasps the cause and effect simultaneously and sees why it happened, whence, where it came from, and to what end all things are moving. It's as if when we perceive any process, we know infallibly whither it is tending if it continues as it is. Now, always free will can introduce modifications, and then there will be a different effect, and we will grasp that immediately as well because of the modification. So we can, in fact, change our lives. If we simply persist in the way things are, the effect is already determined. It grasps the cause and effect simultaneously and sees in any context of interacting factors why this condition exists, whence it came, what did it arise from, and to what end or configuration or pattern it is moving. And this is really a form of, let's call it, unmediated knowing. Or, in Master Moria's words, direct knowledge. Infallible, pure, intuitional, infallible comprehension. Well, DK really needs this. Let's just think of being a spiritual psychologist. As he is, and assessing what one's chelas must do, what condition they are in, how it happened that this condition exists, how to change the condition. This is not just, well, experiment with this, try that. This is knowing that if his chela will do thus and so, the effect is inevitable. And seeing exactly where it will lead if the instructions are followed. So there's a surety of touch here, a surety of clear guidance that results from such intuitive comprehension. One knows directly the state one's chela is in, or a group of human beings, or a civilization. One simply knows things as they are and not as they seem to be. So one knows things as they are and not as they seem to be. It is not possible for the aspirant to take these words into his meditation and profit greatly thereby. See, the aspirant is still encumbered by ahamkara and by attention to the lower personal self. For he will be meditating as an aspiring mind more than and not as the soul. So this is very clear, you know, that some closer identification as the soul is needed to perform these meditations. One must be, I think, an advanced disciple to profit. One must be realizing that his true identity is the soul, and even more, the monad. No matter, therefore, how great his effort, it will be the material more than the consciousness aspect and pattern which will engross his attention. And so what's he saying? Really, that for anyone who hopes to be successful with this type of meditation, that one must be engrossed with the consciousness aspect. And the consciousness no longer preoccupied with material concerns. So really, this is a soul type of meditation. One is seeking to meditate as the soul meditates. One is entering contemplation. One is merging one's normal meditation with that of the soul. One is becoming the soul in meditation. One is becoming the soul in meditation. When he has reached the point where he can meditate both as a soul and as a mind, involving the brain reaction, so, you know, the usual alignment, so much discussed, of soul, mind, brain. Okay. Then he will understand the purpose of these words and will view both the symbol and the inner living structure and the emerging conscious ideas with the synthetic comprehension and a simultaneity of reception which it is impossible for me to put into words. Then, so if he can meditate as soul, mind, brain, then he will understand the purpose of these words and will view both the symbol, the inner living structure, and the emerging conscious ideas with synthetic comprehension and a simultaneity of reception, which cannot be explained by DK at this point in words to us. So the symbol is the outer factor. The inner living structure, the middle factor, and the emerging conscious ideas, the causative factor. We have the three aspects of divinity listed here, and we have a great incentive, really. He's telling us about this, well, you know, that's why I wrote it in purple. Pure, intuitional, infallible comprehension. If we could memorize that little phrase, ponder on it, and see what it brings to us. Pure, intuitional, infallible comprehension. We could seek to see any content of consciousness with pure, intuitional, infallible comprehension. Seeing if we can see cause and effect immediately. See if we can see whither all things are tending. Can we see that? Can we with immediacy see wither. All things are tending. Or at least the thing upon which we are focusing. When we look at someone, for instance, can we tell their future? Can we immediately sense whither they are tending if they persist as they are? The master can do this. He could see forward. He knew which of his students were going to persist and for how long and which ones would pass over and so forth. He knew how much time they had left, what they might accomplish in this life, or what were the obstacles to accomplishment. He could see the possibilities, what would happen under the present conditions and what would happen if the conditions were changed. Well, you can see how much there is to ponder on this discussion of inclusive reason, but not only of inclusive reason, but of all the three, isolated unity, inclusive reason, presented attributes. They do share some things in common, and they all bring illumination, imagination, and inspiration in different measure. So then the outer, the inner, and the inmost will be understood. Then the outer, the inner, and the inmost will be understood. And toward that understanding, we are tending as we seek to use the techniques of fusion, seek to achieve the full fusion of the inner man, informed by the solar angel, and the outer man with which we are more familiar. You might well ask here of what profit it is for me to write these things at all, and to say much that I've said in this treatise. After all, this treatise, EP2, and really all five books, which he intended at the time to write, are advanced, really. And I would reply, he says, there are a few today, and there will be an increasing number in the next two decades, so we're looking at the 40s and 50s, or maybe the 60s of the last century, who, grasping the beauty of the presented idea, will be urged by their souls to work towards these ends. Who knows where the urging comes from, the urging that we feel? The higher influences are at work in our lives. These influences enter our consciousness. We feel prompted, and we follow the prompt. But as to the origin of the prompt, well, we may be a little bit obscure. He tells us it's our higher nature, our soul. By so doing, they will succeed in raising consciousness, raising the consciousness of the entire human family. So, what is he saying? Whoop-ba-dum. So, work upon yourself and raise all. The results of using this meditation on the synthetic detail, meditation on the synthetic detail of the manifested life. It's so beautifully expressed. DK has said of all the Eastern masters to have the greatest grasp of English, and I'm sure after working with Alice Bailey so closely, his grasp of the contemporary use of English increased considerably. They worked out some form of expression in English which was very suited to expressing ideas in word form. So the results of this meditation on the synthetic detail of the manifested life, just as he gave us results earlier, let's go back there for a second and see if we can see, okay, maybe I went too far. The results here for the first ray, let's review them. A definite illumination of the mind, number one. The creative imagination powerfully evoked, and I imagine, seeing the wholeness of things, all forms as one. And it's the oneness that counts. And how he can cooperate. There will be a sentient development of creative cooperation, not just obedient service, and another result, inspired. The inspiration to serve humanity and to cooperate with the custodians of the plan will be his. These are the results of using isolated unity and the first ray technique that it implies. Now let's go down. Speed reading, right? Oh, yes, there it is. What will be the results of using this meditation on the synthetic detail of the manifested life? So, what will come? The realization of the true significance of light and the revelation of the meaning of what has been called in esoteric books the heart of the sun. Well, whether that is the soul of the solar logos, or whether it is somehow the etheric heart expression of the solar logos on the monadic plane, I infer that it is there, or whether it's the subjective sun, a kind of a expression of love upon the cosmic astral plane. In any case, the true significance of light and the revelation of the heart of the sun, the magnetic cohesive love which holds all things in relationship. So the realization of the true significance of light and the revelation of the meaning of what has been called the heart of the sun, which is the inner point of life in all manifesting forms. It's almost like related, RTD, to that point of buddhi, which is found at the heart of every atom and presumably every being. Illumination of the mind will be seen to be direct and infallible and will usurp the place of the present theoretical knowledge and belief. So light will reveal. There will be, well, you know, we've used a particular word of power. Remember this one. I see the greatest light. This is particularly connected with the second ray. And in that greatest light, in that light, I know things as they are. So the revelation, really, of light and love is what can be expected. And this will create the illumined, loving mind, which knows intuitively and directly the truth of things. So the realization of the true significance of light, light as substance, light as the revealer of that which is in the mind of God. Light as substance, and light as the revealer of that which is in the mind of God. And the revelation of the meaning of what has been called the heart of the sun. Well, I started a compilation on the heart of the sun, and I realized there was much more to it than I had thought. I had always assigned it to the soul nature of the solar logos, and indeed that is one of the meanings, but there are other meanings as well. And when we experience the second initiation and begin to realize what the solar flames of the heart are all about and encounter the meaning of Neptune, we have some initial contact with the heart of the sun, just as we do with the central spiritual sun when we are taking the third degree, however attenuated that contact may be. So, illumination of the mind will be seen to be direct and infallible. And, well, we can say, really, that pure reason will take the place of reasoning, like Neptune taking the place of Saturn. Saturn is sequential, reasonable, as it affects our lower minds at least, gives us the ability to logically pursue the truth, but it is not immediate revelation. So the heart of the sun is a means of revelation, is a means of direct revelation. So this will be one of the effects and results of pondering on inclusive reason and of trying to see all things in wholeness and in meticulous entirety simultaneously. The creative imagination, so in every case do we see this, that in every case the three factors, illumination, imagination, and inspiration, all result from the use of each of these formulas. Although, as I said, one is more emphasized in each case, illumination for the first ray, imagination for the second, and inspiration for the third. Further, the creative imagination will be occupied with those measures which will throw the light into the dark and unrelieved places in the as yet incomplete creative process. We're involved in a planetary creative process. We may not know how to proceed. Our imagination, used in this way, will tell us how to proceed to manifest the plan. Well, in the dark and unrelieved places, we often say, well, I don't know what to do. I know there is a plan that has to be manifested, and I know it tend towards light, love, and power, but what specifically to do in this context? And maybe we can begin to imagine in such a way that the intuition will speak, revealing the plan. We can imagine in such a way that the intuition will speak and will reveal the plan in greater detail and exactly what we can do to carry out that plan. The man then works consciously in the light as a light bearer. And he's not just feeling his way in the dark. Perhaps my meaning will emerge more clearly to some of you when I point out to you that the disciple usually sees himself as a point of intensified light within the light of the world, and then seeks to use that light, which in him is in him atomic, etheric, and that acquired as a soul, for the furtherance of the plan. Well, this is a good way for us to see ourselves. I am a point of light within a greater light. Right? I am a strand of loving energy, energy within the stream of love divine. I am a point of sacrificial fire focused within the fiery will of God, and thus I stand. I am a point of light within a greater light. So, we are light within a greater light. We, the disciple, are light within a greater light, and we are to use our light content to bring light to less lit places, darkened places. Well, this is how we attempt to work. I am a way by which men may achieve. I am a source of strength, enabling them to stand. I am a beam of light, shining upon their way, and thus I stand. This is, you will recognize, the mantra of the disciple. Well, our light must increase, and our capacity to bear the light, and sometimes withstand the light, bear the burden of the light, must increase. This is what Master D.K. calls the strain of knowing. We can intensify that, increase that, so we can be more effective and skillful in bringing the light into dark places. This is the ray of light-bearing influence we're talking about. So what else is produced here? The creative imagination will be specially employed. Will be especially employed. Throwing light into dark and unrelieved places, we'll know how to do this. The imagination will entrain the intuition, which will reveal to us, how we have to throw light into the dark places. Okay, so that is result two, result one. Well, we'll collect these results at the end. Here's result three. Okay. This necessarily produces an intensified service to those in dark places. Well, if you think about the Christ, you know, he is the light of the world, and he came to give light to the darkness, but the darkness comprehended it not. And many of us may feel, as we're speaking of the ageless wisdom, that we are the voice crying in the wilderness. We may feel that way. The disciple will seek to bring the light of knowledge to them first of all, and then the light of life. And we have to ponder on this distinction. Well, it takes us back to the Garden of Eden, doesn't it? So eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge, but not yet of the fruit of the tree of life. And becoming immortal, the light of life, sheds light upon the manner of becoming immortal, or of realizing oneself as an immortal God, an inner immortal being. There is a type of light, which animates the life expression within us, and confers, even via Kundalini, a new livingness. Well, there's much to ponder here. Most of us are conveying to others the light of knowledge, but we could perhaps convey light upon life itself, revealing the core of livingness within each. Within each individual. So it's the light of being, light upon being, and conveying this to others. But first they have to have the requisite knowledge, and so do we have to be living. We have to be immortally alive in the spiritual, in the spiritual sense, to convey the light of life. It is associated with Aries, associated with Taurus, and also to an extent with Pisces. Those are the three signs in which I have heard the phrase the light of life used. Of course, all is vibration. Light is vibration. And what we call life in manifestation is vibration. What life is itself, it's pure being. It's something in a way that is the only one thing. It's indefinable in a way. but light upon the life processes, light which intensifies the realization of life within the being, light which teaches how the life aspect may emerge into greatest prominence, light which makes us live. Okay. Well, I can't write it all down, but life which makes us live. When we have been spiritually dead. So light, put it this way, light which brings brings us to life. It makes us living beings, and it also brings us to the life aspect. And its medium of transition is through the energy of love. So let's say that if light is conveyed with love, it will more successfully lead to the awakening of the realization. Realization of the life aspect. Then we shall truly begin to live. The light of life must come from a plane of livingness, and thus from the cosmic etheric planes. It cannot come from below, because there is no true livingness in the lower three worlds. So it's got to be cosmic etheric in its nature. At least these are some thoughts then about the light of life. So let's summarize here, and we'll say that the results of meditating upon the synthetic detail of the manifested life, realizing the... I see what our problem is here. I don't like to leave this continue numbering. Well, okay. Let's see here. Numbering, and we'll go on to set number value, and we'll say, let it be a 3. All right, that makes me feel better. So what are the 3 results we have? Let's take a look. 3 results of meditating on inclusive reason. All right, let's get them and summarize them. Just to fix them in our minds, the realization of the true significance of light and the revelation of the meaning of the heart of the sun. So, the realization of the true significance of light and the recognition of the meaning of the heart of the sun. All right, that's number 1. Any one of these is profound and is a huge process. The creative imagination will be occupied with measures that will help throw light into dark places. So the 2. The creative imagination will be used in such a, or activated in such a way that it can be used to throw light into dark places. Okay. And I'm just going to bring that back a little bit. All right. Don't want to be too fastidious here, but you know, it grows on you. Okay. Well, I guess we're not going to be able to... All right, at least we have a number 3. That's something. And what I'd like to do is make that all red if I could, but it won't let me do that. All right. And the third result will be an intensified service as a light bearer to those in dark places. To those in dark places. Okay. The three results of meditating upon the synthetic theme of inclusive reason. And we've seen how the light, how the fusing power descends through the energy system of the second ray type, and these are the results. So light, heart of the sun, creative imagination, conceiving of the ways to aid the plan, conceiving of the, let's just say, the creative imagination reveals the ways that light may be thrown into dark places in order to serve the divine plan. So really what we need is a tabulation showing in each case the results which arise from the using of the particular advanced meditation theme. So advanced that even the masters of the wisdom could use these meditation themes, but we can at least begin. So, all right then. Naturally it's incomplete, but this is the end of Techniques of Fusion and Duality, webinar commentaries, number 4, EP2, page 396. And we will beginning with Techniques of Fusion and Duality, webinar commentaries, number 5, EP2, page 396. Well, we're getting close to the Virgo full moon. Maybe I can do this yet tonight. I don't know. Before the full moon meeting, maybe. And maybe it will have to wait until the next day. But in any case, we have a lot to think about, don't we? Isolated unity producing its own sequence of illumination, imagination, inspiration, and inclusive reason producing its own sequence of illumination, imagination, and inspiration, and this intensified service as a light bearer to those in dark places. One is inspired to do this and has the energy to do this. Hence the connection with the word inspiration. All right, that will be all for the moment, and we will go on as we can. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.